Now I have a
Hello.
Oh, you got it.
Okay, folks, come on in, take your seats. We're going to get started. And last call for public comment. You guys, if there's anybody else that still wants to make public comment, please fill the blue sheet out and put it in the box.
I guess we have Steve that's talking to
talking this morning, and he said that he works downtown. He said in Portland, it actually didn't snow, it just didn't stick. And I hadn't even heard that we got any snow yet. So you're right. I think it's probably not too much higher. Who else got some sunshine yesterday? That was welcome.
Ready.
You ready to go? Good evening. We on here? Good evening. One more time. Good evening. Thank you. So this evening we're getting started. It's a little bit after 5:30, and we like to stay on time so that we leave on time and get our work done in the process. Tonight, if I could have your attention, we've got some important things to share tonight, and I'd like to break away. Both JVP and I have talked about the importance of breaking away from our regular process and asking Juan Carlos, Counselor Juan Carlos, whatever your name is, to open tonight. So please.
Thank you, Pam. All right, everybody. I'm feeling a little sick, so if you hear a little scratch, someone got me sick, and I'll find you. Anyway, thank you for attending your 18th meeting of the Transportation Task Force tonight. I want you to know that the council, myself, we're very grateful for your time, for your service, and your commitment to this measure, of course. And although this process has been moving swiftly, and I know I've spoken with a few of you and feeling like that pace is there, there are moments where I feel like it's not going fast enough. Just yesterday, Leslie Shmadiki left her home in Cornelius at 7 a.m. and was hit and killed on her way to the bus stop on TV Highway. Having grown up around TV Highway, having grown up in Cornelius, tragedies like this are too commonplace, and it's devastating that every day people run across five lanes of traffic at 50 miles an hour to one of the region's most popular bus lines, and that they don't have a crosswalk for sometimes more than 2 miles. I just want to have a moment of silence for Leslie. You know, the communities that live around these corridors, they're really looking to us, and we hear that, we see it in the reporting. They need this measure and the resources, and they needed it yesterday. So I want to, again, thank you for your time, and we can't do this without you. Before I hand the mic, I'd like to give you a brief review of the council's work session from yesterday. We are happy to give staff the green light to continue developing plans for the unanimous segment of the recommendation that you gave to us. We also asked staff to be more critical of the project elements that you highlighted on the 82nd Avenue overpass project and the C2C corridor, ultimately ensuring that the projects in this measure abide by the values and the outcomes that we've all agreed upon. We also directed staff to get more clarity from Clackamas County on the extent of the Sunrise Corridor right-of-way acquisition. On Monday, we had our public hearing. We had over 50 people come and give testimony. And of the many themes that we heard keep going and please keep to the values that you've made to this process. In the coming weeks and months, we'll be engaging community across the region to learn about our programs buckets and where we can make the most significant impact with those resources. And we're also going to need your high-level feedback on the revenues and how we structure this, and most importantly, what we refer to voters. All in all, we've come a far way to get to this point, and we still have a bit of way to go. But people are counting on us to get this measure done, so thank you so much for being here.
Important words, and thank you for your sensitivity on the issue. And for me, and I suspect for all of you in this room, the event of yesterday underscores the importance of what we're doing here. And it brought it home to me very, very strongly that what we're doing is incredibly important. And what we're doing, we are working towards saving lives. We are working towards saving dignity. We're working toward the humanity aspect. And I think that that's a very important piece. So with that, 17th. Meeting. Wow, that's a lot. It's nice to be back together after the holidays. We all hope that you had a great holiday season, even if it does kind of seem like a while back now. So, as you remember, the last meeting was a huge milestone for this group, and congratulations again on the level of consensus that we reached on the huge portion of our recommendations, almost 99%. So, with that, I'm going to turn it over to JVP for some welcome words.
So thanks, everyone, for coming back and being here for the 17th meeting. That is a lot of meetings, a lot of time, but the good news is that we are in the home stretch of our work as an advisory committee. We are really talking about what's ahead in the next few months, so tonight staff is going to give us an overview or a preview of what our final series of meetings are going to be about. And we'll also hear about the upcoming engagement that's going to take place on region-wide programs. What we're here to do tonight is to continue a discussion that started back in December, for those of you who were able to attend that meeting, about the revenue options for this measure. And we want to make sure that the discussion that we have here tonight is a chance for Metro Council to hear from the diverse perspectives that we have, the diverse knowledge and experiences that all of us have, as they consider what revenue options should be continued to be considered for the measure. So we will have a robust discussion on that, in addition to hearing what we're going to be doing for the next few months. And before we get into the meat of our meeting, you may notice that Allison looks a little different. You remember Jean from our first, when we were first getting back together. Allison is sick, so Jean was so nice and to come and help us out tonight. So I'm going to turn over to you for housekeeping items.
Okay, and so nice that you guys gave me a meeting where you don't have a decision to make. Thank you. So, nice to see you all again. Housekeeping, water and bathrooms are across the hall, just down the ways a bit. If there is any event that would require us to exit the building quickly, go down the stairs and out the north exit, just down and out that direction. Also, I want to point out tonight to all the committee members, your mics are hot. They needed to leave them all on at once, so just bear in mind that they're there, and if for some reason, because they're hot, one of yours is having a problem, borrow your neighbor's mic, and speak in really closely. So those are the issues, though. Housekeeping, anything else that needs to be shared before we get going? Great. Okay, so we have three people here tonight to do public comment, and rather than write them up, since we only have three, I have Nicholas Skinner. Nicholas, you'll be first, Ron Buell second, and Walter Robinson. So in that order, and have you all been and spoken to the committee before? Okay, you get a minute 45 seconds, and tonight Craig is going to have the timer for you because Allison's not here, and I asked Craig to do that for me. So, and just have a seat right here, and I'm going to give you the mic.
Oh, hi.
So,
hello.
All right.
Hello. Hello. I'm Nicholas Skinner. I'm a student at PCC. I had a question about the diesel fleet that TriMet currently uses and where I could find more resources on that. If you could answer that at some point for me. I also represent the Triforce Dojo. And my Grandmaster Ruth would like to know if we were interested in diagonal crosswalks and implementing that sort of process in order to create more safety in our streets. That was it.
Okay. In terms of the protocols of answering that, if you don't get the answer in the course of the meeting, stick around. And the team, Craig, I'll have you go to Craig first, and he'll divert you to somebody else if need be.
And there's okay. Some from TriMet here tonight, who might be right over there, so they may...
Oh, good. Thank you.
This is my 17th meeting of this group, and I love much of your staff proposed plan, such as the safety and speeding up of buses. But if the ballot measure goes out as it is, I'm going to organize and work against it and write and talk against it. What Metro plans to take to the ballot instead of being $20 billion in 2020 is simply not sufficient to deal with the system transportation problems the region faces. those problems are Metro's responsibility to plan for. You have proposed no reliable way to get people out of their cars. You let TriMet totally off the hook. You are not opposing the billions of dollars the state and ODOT will use to expand our freeways in the region and build a humongous new bridge and $1.5 billion of interchanges near the Columbia. You weren't allowed to critique the the $3 billion Southwest Corridor, nor deal with congestion pricing, nor create protected bikeways. You aren't really reducing the 8.3 million tons of carbon being infused into our airshed every year in this region, the vast majority of it coming out the tailpipes of the millions of our daily auto and truck trips. Sure, the staff is bragging about the 5,200 tons the Southwest Corridor will be 17th, but that is 6/100ths of 1% of 8.3 million trips.
Okay, thank you. And you all know you can provide written comment too, I hope.
Okay.
So, and they'll get around to everyone. And there, good. So, Walter.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good evening, Metro Task Force and co-chairs. My name is Walter Robinson II, and I am the lead organizer for the Getting There Together committee, or coalition, excuse me. I didn't plan on doing any testimony today, but I did just want you all to take this message as a little bit for food for thought. In your last message, in your last meeting, actually, you all did a lot of great work in thinking around projects. And you begun to have the question around equity within your projects. And now that we're kind of past the phase of projects and entering into programs, you've all done a lot of work in these past 18 meetings, in these past months. But don't lose steam as we are getting into the programs piece, because the programs, to me and to the coalition, is what is going to be the transformative piece, the transformational piece that will outlive the brick and mortars that will probably be around for about 50 to 100 years, right? If we could put something in place in the program side that actually goes to changing policies, culture for the future, we can be in a place where this region's transportation system is truly transformational, with communities leading, especially in the anti-displacement piece. When we think about that housing piece that kept coming up a lot in that last meeting around mobile homes, think about what that looks like within the region and how we can continue to use the potential funding, hopefully around 40 to 50 million a year, to enhance the programs, which would definitely help with building those projects. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you, all three of you. So with that, back to me.
Yes.
So thank you for the public testimony, and I appreciate the encouragement to stay focused, Walter, and to stay looking to the future. So thank you. Thank you for that. As you know, Commissioner Vega Peterson, JVP, and I presented our recommendations at the Metro Council work session on January 7th. And I think what's important to note here is that we presented our recommendations. When I say our, that's all of us in this room. And I'm speaking for myself, but I know Jessica agrees that I was really proud to be able to represent this group of people and to be able to put forward what the recommendations were. I'm also pleased at the response that we got from the Metro Council. It was very affirming, and it was very nice to hear, and I want you all to know that there is a great amount of respect for the
the work that's been done, the trust that's been built, the conversations that have occurred, and the future commitment to stay focused on this project. So I was also pleased to represent the task force at the council's public hearing meeting on Monday, and there were several of you there on Monday night. KC was there. You provided testimony. Thank you for that. I saw Emerald there. Mayor Calloway was there. Did I miss anybody? Stephen Gomez was there. Thank you. And it was really, again, when I kicked off and talked about the recommendations, it really felt positive to have members of the task force there together so that we were all presenting at the same time. We had about 50 people that testified over a couple of hours. There was, I thought, overwhelming support for the recommendations. There was critical comments about different parts of the recommendations and support for parts of the recommendation that may not have gotten 100% or consensus view. And it was very well done. People were very gracious in offering their thoughts, their comments. We had one little minor time when there was a little bit of a confrontation, but not too bad. So we worked through that. And all in all, I believe that the council had the opportunity to really hear from the public, including 8-year-old Alice, who testified about the... Is she up here? Oh, there she is. She testified about the importance of the Oglo Bridge and how, and when President Peterson asked her how old she was and why she wanted a bridge, she was right there with all of her comments. She wanted to be able to bike across. She wanted her friends and the people that she knew to be able to use it as well. So it was a powerful evening. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to JVP.
Yep, so all that took place on Monday. And then yesterday, the council actually met to continue the discussion of the task force recommendations at their work session. So... it's a very spirited conversation, so it's nice for that to be around. They have very spirited conversations about the Tier 1 corridor projects that we've put forward, and to give us a much more detailed take on that discussion and related to that.
Okay. Well, I provided the majority of the bulk of my feedback already. As I mentioned, the segment of the package that was unanimous, we were happy to see staff move forward on that and do the appropriate project development, of course, working with our implementing jurisdictions. And for folks that missed it, we asked staff to look a little more critically at the 82nd overpass project and the C2C corridor. We also asked staff to ask Clackamas County about the extent of the right-of-way acquisition detailed under Sunrise Corridor. But all in all, we had a very spirited conversation. We talked at a high level and at a very human level about the values and the outcomes. And the conversation that you've had here has definitely been channeled to our council work session. So thank you.
Good evening, welcome back, and Happy New Year. So just looking at the slide up here, We are looking, we have tonight's task force meeting on revenue discussion, and we'll talk about this later when we get to that discussion, but we're really looking to you almost like a focus group, trying to get high-level feedback on the funding measures, and I will provide some parameters around that from the work we've done and the polling work and whatnot. But we're looking to get your feedback so we can go to the Metro Council later this month, which is the next meeting in the red bar, to really ask them to help us narrow the focus of what revenue sources to continue working on. We then want to do some deeper, and just like with the projects, we want to, on the revenue sources, dive in deeper, do some additional analysis, and do a deeper equity analysis, and begin the conversation with community, with business groups, with others about those revenue sources, those tools, and the appropriate sort of rates to how much revenue we can raise from them to then work to match that up with the projects and the programs that have come out of this table. Then moving ahead to February, Molly will talk a little bit about this, but we plan to put together workshops, one in each county, around the programs to continue the dialogue around the programs, how to structure, how to scale and scope those. And then we plan, if we jump to the next couple, we plan to bring forth some staff recommendations around the programs, bring those here to the task force, but also to the Metro Council, and then leave plenty of time for the Metro Council to work through that scaling and that scoping of the programs as we head towards May. Back to the green bar. The February meeting is going to be largely focused on surfacing the five Tier 2 corridors that we've received information or interest from our jurisdictions around. As you recall, way back when, we set out with 13 Tier 1 corridors, a further 16 Tier 2 corridors, and we asked jurisdictions if they were interested in bringing forth Tier 2 corridors for further conversation and examination to give us some information, some scoping, other information. So we've been working with them so we can bring those concepts to you in February for discussion and dialogue, and then in March, and this is important, we're proposing two meetings in March and two meetings in April. That's the bad news. The good news is we're going to hold a meeting time we have on your calendar in May, but with our current schedule, we're not expecting to need to have you meet in May. Unless in the great reconciliation between revenue availability and the appetite to spend money on projects, we have a serious hiccup and a problem and need to have you come back in that time and continue your work. But our current proposal is to add a meeting March 4th, add a meeting, on April 1st, so two meetings in March, two meetings in April. I believe we've sent out calendar holds to all of you, but I wanted to underscore that tonight so you hear it and note it. So the decision or your recommendation on Tier 2 corridors would be that first meeting in March. And then the second meeting in March, we want to get into the dialogue about appropriate oversight and accountability mechanisms for the measure, and also begin talking with you about an expenditure plan. How would we look at placing the projects and programs in a timeline and thinking about how and when we could begin to lay out the plan for implementation from the sense of how much can we actually spend per year, how many people can we hire to do this work, how long does some of the planning take before you can get in the ground on projects, and how many projects at one time can any one jurisdiction handle, and start laying that out and working through that with you and our council later in April. Then the April 1st meeting is to talk with you about the staff recommendation around programs after we've had some chance to engage around scale and scope, et cetera. And then we're looking at the April 15th meeting, the regularly scheduled meeting, for refinement, discussion, and hopefully that's the last meeting kicking off your recommendations to the council. They can finish their work up in May and get to an end of May referral. Any questions around that timeline? I will say, as we presented to council this last 2 weeks, we have kicked off much more aggressively a few teams to answer many of the questions that you had more fully about analysis, so analysis around climate, around jobs, around equity. We've been doing that work along the way, but now that we have the full recommended package, we've got teams internally working with our information folks, our research center, to ensure that hopefully by the February meeting we can come back with more robust details about what we think the impacts of the package will be in those areas. Any other questions on this? Yep. Climate analysis, equity analysis, jobs analysis, and looking at how what are the impacts of the measure, how does it fit into the larger ecosystem of work that we're doing, the state's doing, et cetera. Yep. Okay. We also heard from you, not just at the last meeting, but the last couple meetings, a strong interest in what happened to the programs, where are the programs. We want to make sure the programs that we've talked about over the summer are held as important aspects of the measure. We've been doing a lot of work internally. Margie Bradway in planning and her staff have been working to think about what would be the administrative and grant making and other aspects of these potential programs, and have been doing a lot of internal work to prepare for engagement beginning now and into February and March. We have funded 4 organizations to engage more deeply in that and other parts of the measure development, and so we're building capacity of those organizations. We're also be working with many of our local jurisdictional partners along the way on the programs. We're trying to identify which of these 10 different program areas are folks really interested in being more involved in. So that's informing the work that's to come. And I'm going to invite one of our staff to come up and talk more about that timeline. So we've got Molly Cooney-Mesker, who's on our engagement team and helping to lead some of that work. Let me sit where I am.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Good evening, Task Force. We know there's a high level of community interest in these region-wide programs, as there here is around this table, and we're really excited to re-engage with communities in shaping these programs to ensure that they reflect community needs and community priorities on the ground. We're developing a few different opportunities for engagement in the near term that Andy alluded to. In mid-February, we'll be holding 3 community workshops, 1 in each county, focused on the region-wide programs with facilitated conversations where we really roll up our sleeves and dig into some key policy questions for each of these programs. Staff, have been working, as Andy said, to identify what some of these key questions are, and we really want to bring those to the community to have a dialogue around those. In addition, we're working with our community partners who are developing focused scopes of work to engage their communities in the programs that they're most interested in around some of these key questions. And we're also working with interested stakeholders who have been involved through this process all the way through and before to answer some of these administrative questions that staff are discussing, key policy questions as well. All of this will be happening in February. There will also be an online component that allows community members to engage, when and where they can more broadly. We will roll up all of this input, consider it, and it will go into staff recommendations that will come before you before going to council in April. And I will say we are very close to nailing down dates for the February workshops, and you will be kept apprised as soon as those are confirmed. Questions?
I, in my perception, there's a lot of interest in programming on this panel, and I have some apprehension from the divided county-by-county approach that has just now been outlined. It seems to me that this committee needs to have an opportunity to weigh the different options and try to come to some consensus on the scope and scale of programming. And I'm not sure that will flow out of 3 individual one county meetings, and therefore I have a concern about process on programs. Some of the people that I talk to seem to have a considerably more expansive idea about what we might do in programming than the 4 instances that staff is so far providing, and if that holds true with the ultimate staff recommendation, and this committee does not have a chance to weigh and discuss that, I think we will be not getting really the input of the full committee on that. That's a concern.
So we are looking to bring that staff recommendation here in April, at April 1st, to have dialogue and more discussion. But we're really looking for community and local input into those programs. The reason to get out into each county is to ensure we're having a broad array of folks have a chance to participate in that dialogue. The survey as well is an opportunity to get a whole lot of feedback. We will absolutely bring that back here to get your input. And then we're looking to the council to give direction to the final scaling, scoping, funding amounts, criteria, those kind of elements for the programs. That's been the plan that we've been working under.
So are there any other quick questions before we move? I know we want to make sure we get the information on the revenue, but any other clarifying questions about the schedule and outreach efforts they just outlined? Okay.
That, before we get started, I would like to recognize that today is Democratic's birthday. thank you for your commitment to this process. Thank you for being here and happy birthday. Okay. So, I think that at this point, what we need to do is get down to the work that we're here to do. We are tonight, the primary purpose is to address and be aware of what the revenue mechanisms are. And I think if we think of ourselves as probably one of the best put together focus groups, then you know, our job is to give feedback from our individual perspectives about these different opportunities that we're going to learn about. So at this point, I think it's time to kind of put your pencils down, relax a little bit. You know, I'm dropping my pencils down and pay attention here.
Yeah, and I would just say that unlike the voting that we did in December, Metro Council isn't looking for a formal recommendation on this group on these revenue options, and so they really want us to have an honest discussion when we're talking about our preferences, our concerns, what kind of questions that we have about these revenue options that may be considered to be for the measure. And, you know, what we're going to do tonight is really review and build on some of the information that Andy presented at the December 11th meeting. He, at that point, drove into deep analysis about fundraising potential, legal considerations, public opinion findings, about a dozen different revenue options. So what we're going to be seeing tonight is not those full dozen options. He's going to give us a recap of that, but he's also going to present a handful of options that seem the most promising and feasible for the what we're talking about for this measure. Knowing what should be taken off the table is also very useful information for Metro Council to have. This can help staff do more deeper analysis and research on how different revenue options could affect taxpayers and make sure they accomplish what we set out to do with this measure. So I know that there will be many, several councilors here. We also know that they are being briefed on all of this discussion that's taking place and that they're going to be very excited about what we have to say in terms of what we are open to, what we want to take off the table around all these revenue decisions. So with that, I will turn it back over to Andy for your briefing.
So I was asked by the co-chairs to do a brief recap because I think not everyone was there at the downtown on the 11th of December. But we talked at that point about sort of where do regional investments and where does this measure fit into the broader ecosystem of transportation funding. And so we did a review of their state and federal priorities and resources and how those flow in. TriMet has its local resources and recent state resources from House Bill 2017, and we talked about the focus of their investments in our region. We also looked at the local resources, the tools that locals use, and the focus that they have, which is largely a maintenance focus, and the state and federal focus is largely a highway and interstate focus. TriMet has been on service in the region, both rail and bus, and they've devoted the recent increase in funding from House Bill 2017 to increasing frequent service and some capital expenditures, but largely increasing frequency, adding frequent lines, et cetera. So then we got to the regional scale and looked at the map of corridors. That the reason the council suggested that we begin this process by examining corridors was to complement some of the state, federal, local TriMet investments that have come in the past and are ongoing. So we sort of set up that story. We talked about the recent polling that we had done, and we shared with you the results of an Eco Northwest analysis of revenue tools. And so the revenue tools analysis was, we asked them really to look only at revenue sources that we found could potentially raise significant amounts of money. So as we said at the time, we didn't ask them to look at a cell phone data plan, because we had done some initial work that said that's really not going to raise that much money. So we first limited the pool of revenues for the analysis to those we thought could raise substantial amounts of money. We asked them in this report to look at what rate would you need for each of these revenue sources to achieve $10 million, $50 million, or $100 million a year, and then also identify any limitations. And so part of what we talked about is when thinking about going to the ballot, we've got three sets of limitations to think about. What's next in the state constitution, what's in Oregon law, and what's in Metro's charter. Those three together have to be understood to understand how you can use revenues, what limitations we have, and I think the story is we have a lot of limitations, both by the legislature, by the state constitution, and in our own charter. We talked about at a very high level, and we've tried to update these numbers from your recommendation at the last meeting. But at a very high level, we're talking about $3.8 billion in the upper left corner of investments in projects in the 13 corridors that have been prioritized. Coming across to the right, that would leverage $2.2 billion in mostly federal funds. And the bulk of that would be Southwest Corridor, drawing down an estimated $1.2 billion. But there's other projects in the mix, like the Burnside Bridge and 82nd, that have the potential to draw down or match other funds. The funds identified in those corridors wouldn't be the only resources to fund those projects. So that gets us to just over $6 billion of investment in capital projects on those corridors. We would use revenue bonds over time, probably in a series of bonds over time, to fund those capital investments. In addition, we've talked about $50 million a year, and Walter, we've never talked about $40 million. It's always been $50 million. I'm teasing you. $50 million a year. Over 20 years, that's a further $1 billion of investments in these programmatic areas. So a total investment from the as a result of this measure of just north of $7 billion all told. Then if we look down at the bottom, our current estimates for what it would take to both pay back the principal and interest on revenue bonds for those capital investments, plus build in $50 million a year for those programmatic investments, is in the range of $350 to $450 million a year. So when you crosswalk that to the analytical work in the Eco Northwest report, if you think about what's the rate required to raise $100 million by one of these revenue sources, you can put together a few revenue sources or raise the rate on that revenue source to start thinking about what does it take to achieve that $350 million to $450 million annual revenue a year. And I'll stop now because I think we have a question.
Well, just a quick question. You're working with pretty hard numbers right up to the point where you get to the how much revenue we need. And then you've got
a big range?
30% range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm curious why all of a sudden there's a range when there wasn't a range up above.
Yeah, so we've had this range the entire time, and there are a lot of questions about what would be the cost of a revenue bond series, what rate can we get. So there's uncertainty on that end, for one thing. We haven't yet worked on our expenditure plan to think about when would we need resources for various projects over what period of time. So the sooner we're bonding a larger amount, the more expensive it is. The more we spread those out in time, the less revenue you need on an annual basis. It gets more complicated than that because we can probably also issue some revenue bonds and do some pay-as-you-go with some of these revenue sources. So a lot of that is to be worked out, and we can do more of that work now that we have at least the initial recommended Tier 1 corridor. So we've got more work to do on that end, but in working with our financial analysts and trying to get a ballpark of what it would take to both issue revenue bonds, pay those back, and have $50 million a year to fund the programs, that's a comfortable ballpark to be in. So we need to hone that. That revenue estimate might go down, it might go up based on our refinement work.
Okay.
So we talked about various characteristics of revenue sources, and I think this is an area we're really interested in hearing from you tonight, to think about what should advance and what should we explore more. I mean, Ken Metro used it. That's actually a sort of yes or no question. It's a legal question, and we lay some of that out in the analysis. Can it be collected easily? Is it something that there's an existing system to collect the revenue? So, for example, nobody collects a general sales tax in Oregon or in this region. So that you'd have to stand up a whole new program, and that would take some time getting to issuing a revenue bond. You would need to actually get to the point of collecting that revenue. So it would delay things a little bit. That's just, for example, a challenge. The vehicle registration fee is collected by the Department of Revenue, by the Department of Motor Vehicles, both on behalf of the state and behalf of counties currently. So there's a system in place to readily collect that revenue source. Does the revenue source raise enough? And we have those analytics. There are some revenue sources that have caps or limitations or allowances in state law and other places. So we can have that conversation. And then, what do our poll results say? Where do these revenue sources fall in the polling results? So I was asked to render a little bit of an opinion here and put some of that on the table. We think on this slide the top four revenue sources better fit into the category of those that have some voter support, have some collectability, fit in the range of raising enough revenue, are collectible within an existing system by either locally or at the state level. That's the employer payroll tax, vehicle registration fee, business income tax, personal income tax. Three of the four of these have some limitations, and I can talk about those a bit. I would not recommend the property tax given a few different factors. One, the amount of revenue you can raise at the price point at which voters seem to be interested in investing directly from their pocketbook, connected with the large use of property tax currently by many of our local partners, and the feedback we're hearing, and then the sort of poor showing that property tax had in the polling. And then as we get into what I would say are not feasible at this time, sales tax and regional gas tax poured very poorly in the polling, and in particular gas tax in the two suburban counties. We had majority polling support in Multnomah County, but less than 40% in both Clackamas and Washington County. And then the vehicle privilege tax and the corporate activity tax, which is also the state's limited gross receipts tax, are actually preempted. So Metro cannot actually levy those taxes. The vehicle privilege tax, though, as we talked about the last meeting, is an immediate proxy for an automobile sales tax. We could assess an automobile sales tax, but that's the corollary of you're either charging it of the dealer, which is what the state did and then preempted local governments from doing, or you're charging it of the car purchaser. So you could raise the same amount with an automobile sales tax. So any questions on that slide at the moment? And we'll have more discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, Casey. Oh, sorry, Jim.
So my question, I think, is more complicated. So you can put on the ballot measure you need to raise so much money, but you can't in one question ask, I think, do you want to raise your gas taxes, your payroll taxes, and this? That's three questions, right?
We don't believe so. So on this next slide, we polled a blending of different revenue sources. The legal advice that we are and have been receiving for many years is that there is a rule that you can only ask one topic on a ballot measure, and that topic would be transportation funding. a variety of taxes within that and a variety of projects and a variety of things that you're funding are all part of the transportation funding single subject question. Blending in other topics would violate the single subject, but multiple taxes are part of the transportation funding question is the legal advice that we've been receiving.
But you're actually asking.
And, Jim, I just got a request, and it's really pertinent to everybody. They're having a hard time hearing. Be sure to speak right close to the mic.
But you're actually asking, do you want to pay for it this way? Do you want to pay for it this way? And this way, but I'm no lawyer, but I can see a court, some time in court, fighting the ballot measure in the very beginning, so we better be early.
In that analysis, yes.
Okay, and Casey, you had a question.
Yeah, Andy, quick question. I think, and I'm sorry I missed the December 11 meeting, but I guess my question, just going back to our values and what we discussed at the beginning of our task force meetings, in terms of the revenue sources that you highlighted, was it part of the study was included in terms of the how fair it will be in terms of the income level? Where the distribution that will fall into the in terms of the income category based of our equity and racial justice focus that we talked about at the beginning. Was that part of the study, or how did that fare in terms of the income level?
There's a bit of analysis in the Eco Northwest report. I would say it doesn't go that deep. We had some high-level discussion about impacts and applicability of taxes, but we didn't dive into that too deep. I think what we're interested in doing is narrowing the field a little bit in order to dive in deeper. If folks agree that a sales tax in Oregon is not feasible at this time, then let's not do the deeper dive analysis on that one. That's I think what we're hoping to get during the conversation with you and with the conversation with our council this month. But we do want to dive more deeply in on those questions way before we get to referral in May.
So, Annie, just to be really clear for the committee, what you're really asking them is not a recommendation on what to take forward, but you want to narrow the field. You want their feedback as a sounding board or focus group to inform what gets studied in more depth.
And we're looking for feedback like that. Like, I care deeply about fairness and applicability and that this doesn't affect certain populations. Let's talk about who those are so we can share that with the Metro Council as they consider which areas to focus in on. So let me just run through real quickly. We also talked about, we polled a collection of different taxes combined together, and this was a split sample. So you were, as a respondent to the poll, you were asked just one of these combinations. Each of these combinations by themselves would raise more than $300 or $350 million. So it's in the ballpark of that range of annual revenue sources that we needed. So in two collections of taxes that got more than 50% support were a vehicle registration fee of $50 combined with a high earner's personal income tax of 1% combined with a employer payroll tax. That one got solid support. I will note we shared at the last meeting that our pollster was, he wrote a letter in the very beginning of the poll results. This is not a ballot title question. This is a question about taxes. People generally respond less well to simply a question about taxes, not with a ballot title test. We will do a ballot title test later in this year to ensure that we have viability before asking the council to refer a measure. But we would expect results in the 40 to 50% for a revenue source that we might want to pursue. So above 50% for these combinations is a solid result from our pollster's point of view. The other combination was a vehicle registration fee of $50 and a business income tax of 1%. The third grouping was vehicle registry of $50 of property tax. That would be a $1 billion property tax at that rate in the region. And then an employer payroll tax of 0.6%. The property tax add to that seemed to be what dragged down the results, and that scored just about 40-ish% as I recall in the poll. The reason we put these together wasn't necessarily to test those individual groupings, but to combine a usage tax with a broader tax in a couple different ways and see how voters responded to that sense of registration fee acting as a user tax and then a broader business tax of different natures and a personal income tax, which people understand that they or, in this case, if they make over $100,000, their neighbor would pay. So that was what we were trying to accomplish, was looking at function, not so much the specific. We could blend together different taxes. If you combined all four of the taxes that you just saw on the slide that I suggested are more feasible, you would raise well more than $400 million at the rates that we're seeing up here. So there are ways to think about how to combine these different ones together. That ends up being a bit more of a tactical question around voter support and having conversation with the community and having conversation with the business community about what's supportable. So question over here.
Oh, we've got you. Linda, go ahead.
On the employer payroll tax, as you know, but maybe not everyone knows, TriMet already is funded heavily by employer payroll tax. And I'm curious how what would be proposed there would be on top of that, because incrementally they've committed to an increase over a set number of years in support of transit. And so what would that addition add to what they're already contributing for transportation in the area?
TriMet has a current payroll tax that I believe is 0.76% right now, and they're adjusting it every year up to 0.82%, and that's under state authorization.
Okay.
We don't have any restriction on our authority to raise a payroll tax. TriMet has the ability to raise up to a 0.82%, and right now they're stepping into that tax authority, I think, through 2026.
And you believe that the employers would support such an increase?
Well, so this is the discussion to come. We've got a set of investments that are suggested, and we now need to talk with folks that feel like they may be paying it or we may be collecting it from them,
yeah.
And community organizations and the voters about what's the best way to raise the revenue to meet these objectives.
I personally feel that property tax should be part of the support equation. I think that needs to be a part of it. It has the greatest ability to generate the largest amount of money in the shortest period of time. And I'm surprised by seeing that 40 cents per thousand of assessed value is a deal breaker in terms of even considering property tax. Now, I know that there are going to be other property tax measures in November on the ballot, and maybe that's the concern there. But I'm a little confused about how you would write a ballot measure that would include a variety of taxation, and if that wouldn't make it difficult for people to support it because they didn't support one aspect of it.
So I think that was my last slide. I think this is perfect because we're in
so
the
we
mode of now being ready to...
Yeah, and Sheila's had hers up for a while, too.
Just from an equity perspective, we know that some of the largest families that have been pushed the furthest out have the least transit service. So thinking about the equity of the vehicle fee, even though $50 sounds modest, it's really a lot for the lowest income families. So is there, in the polling or in the research you've done, is there an easy way to say what it would do to the estimates if you exempted people, households at 50% of median or below, or some measure like that?
So making it adapted to income.
Having some exemption based on income. And I don't know what that would be. I just wonder if you already have, you know, if it's easy to look at that.
So we did poll both a range of registration fee. I think in the question we said a registration fee, from $20 to $50. That did better than a flat $50 fee. We also, in some other categories of business tax, we use language like exempting small businesses. That tended to do better. So I think our pollster would say voters generally respond to the sense of fairness around exempting smaller businesses, wanting to promote those, or exempting lower-income families. Some challenges. We don't have legal authority to raise a variable registration fee under existing law. We have the authority to raise up to a $56 annual registration fee or any flat amount in up to $56. That is our existing statutory authority. And we did just make an effort during the last long legislative session to amend the law to separate Metro's authority out. It used to be that the counties and Metro had the same $56 cap. So all three counties now have established a registration fee of some sort. So we would be competing with each other within that $56 allowance. And we got a law passed that said Metro has separate authority from the counties, so the counties can use that tool, Metro can use that tool, but we're both capped at the state rate, which is currently $56.
And not variable. Dave and... Oh, Michael, you put yours down. Did you? Okay. Dave, Michael.
Okay. Dave Robertson with I've got my Portland Business Alliance hat on now. I'm the past chair of Portland Business Alliance. And so I think what I'd say on payroll taxes and is that as general advice on the business community, the earlier you can engage us, and I know there are other people here with business hats on. I think we probably all want to be talking to one another and to the stakeholders and you guys at the same time. What I've sort of learned that the earlier you can get engaged, us, the better. And then I think we can sort of talk amongst ourselves and talk amongst yourselves have that engagement with you to talk about what the it is that you're getting. And what I've sort of found when we worked on the Portland gas tax the first time around, what I found was that once the business community kind of understood what the plan was from PBOT to do the work, they kind of went, oh, okay, that sounds good. We support that. And so I think it's the work that you've done so far and the committee's done that we've all done so far is great because I think that will help a lot. But I think the sooner the better. I think the Portland gas tax got the least delayed and there was a lot more churn on it than there probably needed to be if business community was engaged early. So that, I'd say that. The other thing I don't want to. I'm with my PG hat on. I'm in favor of this bill, but I don't want to jinx it. So the Cap and Invest bill in Salem does have some new provisions that the governor's office is, and the leadership has put in around transportation funding, and I think that it's just important to note that. We'll know in a month and a half whether that's actually can be part of the puzzle that we put together. But I know that's something as the Portland Business Alliance discussions have gone on that they've been kind of excited about because it takes a little bit of pressure or potentially off a payroll tax or something like that. So with that, just engage early and often with those guys. And I can help with that. I mean, we all have contacts and can help sort of convene groups and stuff like that. Happy to do that.
Okay, great. Michael.
Yeah, and I think my comments may really piggyback on a couple of others, but in sort of looking at these mechanisms, the first thing that I sort of default to is whether there are regressive impacts. You know, who in fact falls within the circle of individuals or organizations who are going to be impacted? And are we looking at issues of geography, income levels, to determine if folks who have been burdened by the absence of some of these solutions are going to be further burdened by funding them? And I'd love to see that sort of built in as a metric in the same way that we've looked at equity considerations and climate considerations in some of the other work that we've done. So it's not a standalone question as much as one that will begin to say, you know, if we're looking at income thresholds above $100,000, well, we understand that there will be limited to minimum impact on some of the populations we're concerned about. There are other metrics, however. If I want to buy a car, I'm buying a car. And I'm not going to be isolated from that. And then if we want to look at mechanisms to sort of carve people out of that, we can. But I go to that right away when I see these solutions without understanding what the engagement will be, who's factored into it, and who are we looking to sort of carry the financial load on this.
Okay. Jim.
So I'm very concerned about a property tax measure, and I wouldn't support one because we've...
Yeah. Anna, yours doesn't come through very loud. So
maybe it's not on.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, no, just really close.
I'm really concerned about property tax measure. We already have... people moving out of the Portland metro area to our smaller communities and having to drive a lot further on our roads that we're trying to fund through a property tax measure. So, and we're pricing people out of their homes. And if you don't think they're passing it on in apartments, they are. And it's already not affordable. So the property tax thing's a real challenge. I wonder, and I don't know this, but we looked at one point at a district. And I don't know. It's probably, I don't know how they fund districts necessarily. Probably property taxes. But is there another mechanism that you could form a district, a transportation district, not dissimilar to TriMet, which does payroll taxes? I don't know. But I think property tax. Originally I said I wasn't interested in participating in this committee if we were looking at property taxes.
Okay.
So I mean, I can answer that. So Metro is a special district. That's how we are defined. The port is a district. The TriMet are districts, and we are established for various reasons. Often in modern times, the reason to establish a new district is to establish a new property tax rate. And it's about providing a service for that property tax rate. Most existing special districts have a variety of taxing authorities, like Metro does. They vary. They're distinct. It's either in your charter or it's governed by state law or both. So the only thing an existing district cannot do is establish a new, higher, permanent tax rate. But within any other authority they have, they can suggest fees or taxes. Sometimes they require a vote. Sometimes they don't require a vote. In Metro's case, almost all these taxes, all these taxes we're talking about now, by our charter, require a vote of the people.
Even a VRF?
A vehicle registration fee under state law and our charter requires a vote. Counties do not have to take it to the ballot.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, as you know.
So I'm not quite sure what the order was, but Chloe, Vivian, and Carrie Lynn. Carrie Lynn was first.
Red should be on.
If it's red, it's on.
Okay, it's a dim light, which is indicative of the night. Most people don't know, but the father of Measure 5 and 50, God rest his soul, was a longtime Gresham Knight. And it was not a coincidence that Gresham has the lowest, almost the lowest permanent property tax rate in the state. I think there's one city that's lower than us. So when you talk about property taxes in Gresham, people have opinions about that, as they do everywhere. So I would have some concerns around that. The other thing, which I hate to bring up because I can't explain it myself, is the issue around compression. You can explain
it?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The one thing I know about... I know. I'm now worried about you, Andy. But yeah, well, but the one thing around that I do know is that neighbors could end up having very different property tax implications. And so when we talk about equity, you know, somehow that has to be part of the conversation and the consideration in how that impacts people.
Yeah, Gresham at the time Measure 5 passed, or Measure 50 passed, had an expiring tax levy that the voters didn't renew. And so their permanent rate got set that year by that measure and is permanently frozen in place under Measures 550. So it was a very much happenstance kind of situation, but it can't be fixed under our current Constitution. Compression under Measures 550 with property taxes, local governments can raise up to $10 per thousand of value of a home, that the assessed value of a home. You can't raise more than that with a general levy. So as you think about a school district, well, school districts are separate. Think about a county, a city, a special district, any other entity that raises taxes. If they raise those general levies to a rate that's higher than $10, then for the home that's assessed, you compress down how much you collect from them, and all the jurisdictions that receive revenues have their value reduced proportionally. That only is for general levies. That does not work for bonds, which is what we'd be talking about here, or any kind of capital measure. Property tax bond, general obligation bonds do not compress and aren't a part of the 5 and 50 caps in the property tax system. Sorry about my excitement, but it's actually, yeah.
Um, Great. And so, Chloe or Vivian?
Well, I'm trying to remain impartial because we're actually looking at one of these mechanisms for some Portland, City of Portland needs. But I will say that like Chair Bernard, I don't think I could support a property tax. I know in Portland, around a third of our homeowners are already cost burdened by their own housing costs, which is part of the affordability conversation that gets lost when we're focused on renters, cost burdened renters, and rightfully so, because over half of them are cost burdened. So I think that would be a really challenging proposition, not to mention all the other competing measures, levies, bonds, etc. I always think about who's not paying their fair share. I'm less concerned with polling because I don't know if I should say this in public, but am I? This is politics. I don't know who my friends are anymore. Who's not paying their fair share? It's wealthy people and corporations. So I don't have a great understanding of our property taxes when it comes to commercial property, but I understand it's taxed differently, and I also understand that they're paying taxes on even less of their kind of unearned gains. So I have no idea if that's an option, but that's where I would be looking at who is not paying their fair share, because we already know half the people in our region and probably state really can't bear increased burden.
So look to who's not paying their fair share, and it sounds like gut is probably the wrong word, but your impression is really looking toward corporate and higher income. Is that?
And again, I'm not sure if the commercial property tax is really something that we could look at.
It's the same. It's the same property tax rate as a house or property.
Do they?
Plus, there's a personal property tax.
All right.
So the way the Constitution works, a local government has an established tax rate. That tax rate is uniform, so it's both residential and commercial.
Okay.
What happened with Measure 5 and 50, the way that reform came into place, it reduced the burden of on the corporate commercial side pretty substantially back in the 1990s. The voters were trying to shift education funding to the state at the time. And the state did step over time and take up that slack. But it had the effect of pretty dramatically reducing the taxes on the property taxes that affected businesses at that time.
Yeah,
and part of that is because of the ability to devalue property, which you cannot do on the residential side.
Yeah.
But the rates are the same, and there is no ability of a local government to tax one type of property differently than the other type of property. If you assess, if you propose a tax, it affects all properties equally based on what the assessed value is.
Okay. All right. Yeah, was much more eloquently. That is what someone just recently explained to me, and I could not repeat back to you verbatim. But it's really vexing to me that we have wealthy property owners all over the state who have realized unearned profit on their property due to investment of our public dollars. So I realize this is a bigger conversation than a regional conversation. It's a fix that has to happen at the state level, and it may never happen at the state level, but I mean, we can still just admit out loud that that's a fundamental problem. Like, we're trying to work around a really crappy taxation system. Okay.
Thanks. I like that you said crappy. Thanks for... It is, because it is. I want to follow up on the great framing that Chloe just offered us here. And I think it would be... We would be remiss if we went through all of this robust conversation and sharing ideas and how it affects... you know, how the inequities that were perpetuated starting at the state level and the impacts that has regionally, if there wasn't, that wasn't captured in some manner in order for Metro to be able to convey that back to the state in future legislative sessions, especially if this particular measure is being spoken about as the first step and insinuating that there will be subsequent measures to help fund transportation. We have some deep, deep funding inequities at the state. And I'm especially thinking about some of the newer preemptions that have occurred at the statewide level, in which, just from a good public policy standpoint, we should be lifting in order to restore local control so we can have that conversation here, especially at these kinds of tables. I want to lift up one of the considering options here for personal income tax. I want to recall back in 2017 legislative session when we were finding ways to raise revenue for House Bill 2017 and talking specifically around transit funding, that, you know, advocates had lifted up a tiered and progressive income tax in order to fund transit operations especially. Now, of course, that conversation didn't go any further at the state legislature, and we ended up with, I think, a really bad precedent, which was unlocking the employee side payroll tax. But I'm heartened to see that personal income tax and what's being said here as alternative a tiered income tax. I would say that is the preference here, especially looking at the state economist report that shows the rising wealth gap that we have in our region. So we are getting more and more wealthier people who are doing quite well in a robust economy, and yet we have a growing gulf between people who can't afford to pay more. However, whatever mechanisms we raise, that's going to be borne more by people who aren't seeing their incomes rise as much as the top tier. So I want to lift up this personal income tax and then think more about it and see how we can get that.
Yeah, Mark. And I am operating under the assumption that your protocols you adopted up front about first names is still how you guys are operating. So if that's, hopefully that's the case. Go ahead. Right. Just realizing.
I'm not sure what protocols you're referring to. In any case, I would definitely have to second all the voices that have said that whatever we do, it's got to be progressive. I think roughly 50% of the population in this region lives paycheck to paycheck or worse. They're teetering on the edge of disaster. Property tax is not the right solution, and it needs to tax the people that are currently not taxed. The other thing that I would want to throw out is, and I know I always sound like a broken record, but thus far in the infrastructure planning that we've done, we've made very, very little impact, as was pointed out earlier tonight, on climate. There is some opportunity within programming to make more of an impact on climate, more transit, or at the very least money towards doing a really robust planning process around dramatically increasing the level of transit in this area. So my suggestion is that we consider the possibility of having the programming be more than $50 million a year so that we can actually reduce our climate impacts in our transportation levels through programming, which predominantly is going to mean more transit. But so those are the two pieces. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Danny.
Thank you. Just watching the news unfold in terms of vehicles that are going to start showing up on the roads, one of the tricky questions we've always had is how do the electric cars, buses, trailers, now they're pickups, even though they don't look like a pickup, how do they pay a little bit for the road maintenance? You know, there's gasoline tax not there. So that's the thing, an attractive thing to me about the vehicle registration, that everybody pays a little bit, that actually uses the roads and that causes us to have to maintain them. So I would ask us not to shy away from using that as a possible funding mechanism because it, I'll just let it go with that.
Okay, great. There are a number of people that haven't spoken, and I know, as your co-chair has pointed out, this is really tonight, it's really like a focus group. Here is the information, and the council wants your input. So just want to make sure folks have weighed in, and Emerald's looking right at me, so I'll pick on her.
Yeah, I would say that really the main thing that we have...
Yes.
This is really what the meaning of this meeting is to really hear where people are coming from, what they're thinking about, what they need to see, or what they feel comfortable at. Because this is what we're here to do. So if you need more information, if you're like, I'm not clear on this, I really need to understand why this doesn't work, you know, this is the time to ask those questions and to iterate your feelings.
Hello. So as a representative of a public agency who is not elected in my position on staff, I will take, you know.
Yeah, really close, Emerald.
Really close.
There you go.
Hi. The port is probably not going to play a heavy role in giving a ton of input as to revenue mechanisms. I'm staff of a public agency, so I play an interesting role in that regard. However, the couple considerations that I would want to make is what we learned from other cities and other regions that have passed successful measures is that taking an approach that looks at several mechanisms is common and good, and it helps soften the blow of a really big number. So relying on one or two mechanisms is difficult, and we have not as many mechanisms as these other places have. So as much as it's probably wise to have as many troughs to feed from as possible. So that's thing one. And thing two is that there will be a lot on the ballot in November of 2020. And a lot of people seeking revenue for a lot of really important things. So I'm interested in understanding how this all stacks up and how many other efforts are interested in the same mechanisms.
Okay. Cooper.
Oh, it was already on. Great. Thank you. So
even closer.
Thank you. So in order to share, in the spirit of sharing my thoughts, I'll just kind of state what I'm thinking as I'm listening to this conversation. Maybe ask a quick question before that to make sure I'm tracking the game plan moving forward. But as I understand it from your presentation, Andy, part of the plan is taking back with more fidelity some of these options and then digging into those through polling further. Is that correct, or is the polling piece already done?
So the where we want to dig into it is in conversation, getting out to organizations, getting out to business groups, getting out to others to talk the impacts of different mechanisms, different rate levels in order to achieve the amount of investment, but also talking through as I think Dave referred to, what are the purposes that we're trying to achieve here and what is it that we'd be asking folks to pay for. And that's kind of a gauging process of where is their pushback, where is their concern, where do people have conversations about, you know, is there a way to limit impact on this group, but make sure we're collecting from this group, et cetera. We will do further polling and some focus groups to understand where voters are on these, but really the bulk, I think, of the dialogue and engagement is with community around how do we pay for this, what's the appropriate mechanisms and the appropriate rates.
Sure. So fair enough. So I guess then with that, I've got two kind of primary thoughts, and there's a little bit of tension between them. First is, you know, you laid out in one of your first slides what we're looking at in terms of how easy are these to implement, what kind of things do we need to do for each stream, and then, you know, how what's the appetite from the public for all these? Really, I think that's the key question, right? And I'm less concerned with the implementation problems if it's actually palatable. Otherwise, we're you know, dead on arrival. The bill or the measure will be right out of the gate, and I don't want to see that. That said, as I'm listening to some of the great comments made about, in particular, Michael's eloquent comments about, you know, how do we ensure that we're not further burdening the folks that have been disadvantaged and who are trying to serve with this measure, I'm wondering how we weigh those two. And, you know, if I guess what I'm getting at is, if the revenue streams that are ultimately palatable to the public are going to be the ones that are disadvantaging those, where do we throw in the towel and say maybe this isn't worth it, maybe the juice isn't worth the squeeze? And so that's the kind of tension that I'm having in my mind as I try to reconcile this, and not knowing where we'll come out on either of those things, but certainly agreeing with all the comments that we need to be really mindful of that, that further inequality and further burdening piece of the conversation. So that's kind of where I am.
So, Cooper, just to be clear, so you're saying there's got to be a point where you look and see if it's not looking palatable, how do we reduce
I guess what I'm saying is, so we've identified the benefits and the expected benefits of this measure to those communities that we really want to help. But, you know, to Michael's point, if ultimately the revenue streams to get there are going to disadvantage them, there's got to be a cost-benefit analysis there, right? And so that's kind of where I am. And I just want to make sure we don't go in blindly to that based on what's palatable to the public in terms of what they're going to vote for. So.
Okay, great. Other folks that haven't spoken yet. Leslie, you haven't said any thoughts.
I would just echo the nationally, progressivity in taxes is polling extremely well. I suspect in Oregon it will poll as well. So I want to support people who talked about to make this as progressive as possible and to portray it in progressive terms will help the measure.
Okay. So other folks? Yes, thank you.
All right. I don't want to be redundant, but someone mentioned earlier about, and maybe we can ask for this in our modeling, are there models that show the exempting of 50% below median income? Maybe for every model we're looking at so we can honor the pledge we made to equity and not disadvantaging the already disadvantaged or already burdened, that our models include, this is what it would include with an exemption for whatever criteria we develop as fair, and this is what it would look like without it. And the same with the polling, because you said there's going to be a second round of polling that adds something in. So maybe you could have a poll that says, well, this is what it'll be like with this combination of stuff, or you might have to add, you know, a 3% hit more to your payroll tax or whatever combination if it holds these people harmless that would be unduly burdened by that. I don't know how to frame that, but where you can demonstrate that, because some people would be willing, well, I can pay a little bit more if this group doesn't already suffer, you know, whatever. So just, again, mindful of Mike and Chloe and Vivian and Cooper, everybody's comments about how we can do no harm, but maybe we can tease some of that out with the questions we ask or at least in some of the models we see so we can make a more informed decision. So.
Okay, great. So, Nolan, can I pick on you?
I'm not saying much because a lot of what I'm thinking is being said well by others. So I would just reinforce should be progressive, spread across a number of different sources. I agree that if there's a way to reinforce our values around climate, that would be great. But I also, throughout this, the other reason I haven't said a lot is that I do think that we can talk about the values, but some of this is strategy, and I think there's a lot of really good thinking that's been done. So based on just watching this presentation, I don't feel fully able to push on the different parts and pieces of it. The idea of having people who are driving heavyweight vehicles that are burning a lot of fuel and causing a lot of environmental impact appeals to me a lot. So I would love to see the gas tax reconsidered, but I realize there's a lot of different moving parts and pieces on here. So I think the conversation's been good, and if the smart people who have to figure this out can take all of it into consideration, I think we'll end up with a good package.
The smart people who understand compression. Okay. Yes. And Nate, I'm going to pick on you next, just a heads up.
Thanks. I would echo a lot of what Nolan said. I'll just go a little deeper, especially as a non-elected official. Would just want to make a comment about gas tax, because it's unfortunate that it's like always off the table. You know, this says here somewhere between 13 and 16 cents would raise $100 million. And for sure tonight, between Hillsborough and Gresham, there's a 13-cent difference in gas prices, and nobody could tell us where that is. And it's going to be different from January to July, because it just goes like that. So I realize, you know, there have been people in our community that have lost their jobs over gas tax, but it you know, it's directly connected to how people are getting around, and I also recognize it because it says it in here. I mean, there's a level of regressiveness in it, but for the average person that drives 10,000 miles a year, 13 cents is about $50, and I recognize that matters to some folks, but it's really not that much money.
Okay. Nate.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate about the equality and making sure that we're being fair across the board. I'm always fighting for, you know, fair wages for people. That's what I do for a living. So I also want to make sure that we're being fair with everybody and in the amount that they have to pay for any one of these taxes that goes that direction. I'm definitely not a supporter of property tax going up. I will definitely say that. I, on the gas tax, I'm an operating engineer, so that gets passed on to when I'm bargaining for my members to get higher pay. That will go into those businesses saying, hey, we can't afford to pay your guys any more money because we have to pay more on this tax. So I'm a little reluctant on that. I do hear that. But for my stance, that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay, great. So, Tim, Chloe, is that up just because it got left up? Or? Okay. Tim.
Lots of good discussion. I guess I agree with many points, some of which resonate more strongly, perhaps. I think that the idea of multiple sources is important. I think that people, when they're asked to contribute, kind of want to know that, well, are other people contributing? I mean, is everybody else paying their share, whatever that might be? And so I think that the likelihood of being able to get a positive vote would depend on a positive answer to that, and I think how the package is structured would go to that question. Several of the potential sources indicate that they would need a statutory law change, and that's not going to happen between now and November. In the long run, we ought to recognize, as has been raised, that there's a lot of inequities in our tax system, and we ought to be working on statutory changes to make them more equitable along a variety of fronts. And the efforts that have happened, I'm thinking about League of Cities, has been working on a property tax equity issue for, what, 4 or 5 years now, and hasn't gotten anywhere, has not had adequate support to get anywhere. But, you know, we know that there are people with equal-priced houses, some of which are paying half the property tax of the other person for the same house. The way that things are across the state are not well done. I think about the automobiles. I mean, there's people that go out and buy a car, and they're buying a $1,500 car to be able to get back and forth to work, and there's people that are going out and buying a $100,000 car. Should their fee be the same? I mean, if we're talking, you know, what is equitable, well, you say, well, that would take a state law change. Well, then maybe we ought to be talking about changing the state law so that people that are involved in, you know, more of the luxury end have a little higher fee on it. We wouldn't be the first state to do that. It's done all over the country, and we just have chosen not to, just like we've chosen not to do sales tax. Well, we're going to have to come to the grips that we can't have our cake and eat it too on everything. We can't, you know, restrict and restrict and restrict and still have the funding to do what people need to have done. So I think that we need to not shy away from the question of working for structural change, recognizing it's not going to happen this round, this time, but we need to prepare for the next time. Gas taxes are declining. We're not getting the kind of money out of gas taxes, and over time we've observed how a dollar collected in gas taxes goes less and less far because the cost of building stuff has gone up so much in the last, you know, pick a time, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, whatever. Some kind of a user fee in lieu of a gas tax seems to me to be where we need to be heading. And people that are using roads more or more intensively would logically be ones that should be paying a little higher contribution. Now, how do you do that? That has yet to be all worked out. There's multiple different options that have been suggested, but we ought to be taking a position of some kind to move toward a more sustainable trajectory than just saying, well, gas tax, we'll just raise the gas tax, because, you know, we're not headed toward gas vehicles being the heavy contributors that they were. Gas vehicles are using less and less gas per mile, and all of the alternative vehicles are going to be using virtually no gas per mile. And so that, I mean, you can see that window closing down. We ought to be acknowledging that, not pretending that doesn't exist. I do think that this idea of about having a progressive system that allows for exemptions and allows for tiers, maybe where appropriate, you know, is the only way to really get at the idea of what's fair for everybody. I mean, for each person within the system to feel like, well, yeah, they recognize, you know, that I'm not maybe at the top level, or they recognize maybe you are at the top level and maybe then contributing a little more is appropriate. So figuring out how to do that, I think, is critical to the question of making people feel like it's an equitable ask, you know, when we go to the voters. So those are not real specific, but that's kind of the things I'm thinking.
We're taking notes.
Thank you.
So, Dave, you have not raised yours, and you almost slipped by, and I didn't notice. But
no, I don't really have a lot to add. I've been listening and taking a lot of thoughts. I echo what Aaron App said there about the gas tax. And on one hand, it does seem to make a lot of sense, because I agree that the variableness of it across the region, people probably don't notice as much, but I just don't know how you rely on that if you're looking at something over 15, 20 years and knowing what's going to happen with it. So I think that's one of my concerns with that. Everything else, and I think, has been well said.
Okay. All right. Mark and Sheila, I don't know who had theirs up first.
Just a quick question. I mean, it seems like in the messaging for this, it is a values proposition, but it's kind of ironic that we're looking at gas and vehicle, which we want to reduce as a primary goal. And so it is kind of regressive also. And I just want to think about that in advance in terms of how we connect the sources with the uses. And then in terms of the programs, I don't know if it's an option for us to think about using programmable, you know, revenues to help defer, because I think I heard you say early on that we can't adjust the vehicle registration fee to be more progressive. So can
Correct.
We use program income to it?
Our current authority is to establish a flat rate at some level and on all class of vehicles. So you could pick a $20 registration fee or a $50 registration fee, but you can't. We're not authorized to tier it, and the DMV doesn't have a current structure to tier it based on value of car or fuel use or other things like that at the moment. Other states do have more value-based structures, but we don't currently have that in place, and we're not authorized currently to do that.
Nor any way to exempt a certain income level?
Not having it collected through the Department of Motor Vehicles, correct.
So could we use some of the program money that we're going to talk about more as a way to deal with that fee for people who can least afford it or not.
Oh, like a rebate or something like that? I see what you're saying. There may be ways to get creative about that, and then you need to look at administration of a program and what's the likelihood people would sign up for a rebate and those kind of questions. But we could certainly put that on the table.
Okay, Mark.
Did we look at a VMT at all for this? Would we be precluded from using
a vehicle mile traveled fee? The technology exists to collect taxes or fees off of vehicles based on usage of roads, time of day, all of those kinds of things. Metro is not authorized right now to do that. We don't own the roads that that you would be charging a VMT on. We're engaged in a study along with ODOT on general congestion pricing, looking at all the suite of potential tools to look at managing congestion by putting a price on that. And there's many models around the world of London's cordon and other approaches. But we're sort of in the early days of technology, and a lot of folks are looking to a VMT fee as we electrify the private fleet and as hybrids move in and the gas tax gets less robust on a per-mile basis. So that's certainly a strong focus of a lot of folks involved in transportation finance, but at least Metro right now doesn't have the authority to do that for purposes of this measure.
So go ahead, Jim.
Well, on that idea, when you go through DEQ, they write down your mileage. So each time you re-register your car, your mileage is written down. So there's no ability to do a mileage tax, just how many miles you drove?
We don't have authority to do that. ODOT has run a series of programs to volunteer programs. People opted in to do a road mile user fee. Was it the Rough Tough? And I had other cute names.
Yeah, exactly.
Orego.
Orego.
Yeah. Orego, yeah, the road usage charge. So, yes, that's exactly right, and I think that's where we're probably heading. Long-term, but I think the reality is we're just not there yet in order to be an effective option at this point.
It's been tried with general vehicles and then with electric vehicles. There have been a few quite successful pilot projects, and people, if you're buying gas, you'd be exempt from the gas tax and in place pay a vehicle mile fee. So we know it works. We know the system can function. Metro at least doesn't have the authority to do it, and the state continues to explore this space.
Yeah, and more to the point, with the decreasing revenue coming in from the gas tax, we're increasingly having to figure it out quicker and quicker. So I think we're going to get there, but we're not there yet for this purpose, I would say.
So I'd like to turn it to the co-chairs to sort of reflect on what they heard, but I do want to sort of check in with you all real quickly. I think we heard a lot of consistent input about it being a progressive program and really looking at who pays and how to ensure that the burden is not unfair and that it's meeting the equity values you adopted early on at the beginning of this process. In terms of, I don't know who has control of this slideshow. Oh, good. Sure, this slide. In terms of what they were looking at for evaluating the can Metro use it, can it be collected easily, does it help raise enough, and could voters and stakeholders support it, I think what you all shared today, a number of you, is really making sure that equity perspective was still in there and the climate change aspect was in there. In terms of the next, that other slide about they were asking for your feedback on these different tools, these different funding mechanisms, and Linda sort of started us out with put property tax back on there, and then we heard a lot of no, don't put property tax back on there. But I think the others, don't think we heard much negative feedback on the top tier there. Some disappointment that the gas tax is not a more viable one from several folks. But does that sort of accurately reflect what folks were saying? Yes. Okay.
Yes, I guess.
Well, then I guess chairs, it's up to you now.
I just want to
share my comment on why a regional gas tax actually is interesting to me, because there's a nexus with the work that we're doing, understanding that there's limitations on how that money can actually be used, but there's a direct nexus between a lot of the capital projects that we're talking about and people using the roads through the purchase of gas. So that's the only comment I want to have in terms of the options. Otherwise, I think my feelings on what we should be looking at, how we should be prioritizing, have been very nicely expressed this evening. I did want to say I appreciated Tim's comments about the looking at the structural issues that we have. I mean, I think of some of these, if you look at the slides that you have that were actually shared at the December 11th meeting, that goes into a little bit more detail about how they look at each of the different options. A couple of the things that came up is, like, right now we don't have the mechanism for doing this, or we don't have the way to do this, or the DMV doesn't have a structure like you were saying to tier it. And I think that's exactly what we have to do. Our revenue rely on income tax in the state, and it is a actually progressive way of collecting taxes. But as we're looking at how we can be more progressive in other options, we have to. We as governments and we as organizations that collect taxes have to look at how we do put in the structures in place to look at the progressively of the other needs that we have.
So I think we had a great discussion around the personal side of these opportunities. As far as I remember, I think Dave, you're the only one that really talked about from a business perspective. I know you gave maybe a bit here, just in terms of the maybe not. I think that we need to talk with the business community. When I look at this, and I've had the opportunity to talk to Andy separately as well, and I think we're looking at a large percentage of this coming from the business community. So we need to be thoughtful as we move forward in talking with the business community about the best opportunities. I also personally feel strongly that the user aspect should be a key piece of this. I think that people and businesses are much more likely to support something where they see themselves reflected in it appropriately. And that's another piece of point I think gas tax appeals to many of us. Talking to Andy separately, and the question came up to me about, why don't we tax tires? And you know, I thought, well, that's really interesting. And apparently there's a whole history behind that. But nonetheless, I think the fact that we're all trying to be creative, we're all trying to be protective of those who have the least ability to pay and need what we're providing the most. So I'm comfortable that the recommendations coming to staff are reflective of those issues. But I have to say that Sheila's comments about, wait a minute, you know, we're trying to disincent the use of the vehicles, and yet that's the place that we're looking for the greatest amount of revenue. The other issue I'd like to talk about just briefly is the payroll tax piece. And in talking with businesses on the west side, one of the issues with many of the large companies there is their payroll tax and their limited ability to access the transit opportunities at the same time. So, as Dave said, this is going to involve a lot of conversations. It's conversations with people who can give us guidance on where we can make this work. And that's the bottom line. We've got to make this work, and we've got to come together tonight.
Okay. Well,
I
guess so.
Yeah.
I know you're all heartbroken to wrap up early.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I want to make sure that
No, we really appreciate all of the input and the feedback. I think we've taken a lot of notes. We've got other folks taking notes, and this will help us with our conversation with the council as we work to narrow. So greatly appreciate you leaning in on this and participating tonight. Oh, sure. So we reviewed some of this early on, but just as a reminder, so we're going to take this information and the polling data and the Echo Northwest's information to our council and ask them to help us narrow the fields, and so we can then begin the process of much more robust engagement. But that meeting is on the 28th of January. Why is the 19th up there? Just we're telling them we have a work session. What are we taking then? I've forgotten. I lost the plot. Okay. We have a work session on the 18th, and we'll tell you later what the agenda is there. But we'll be back with you on the 19th. That's the Tier 2 corridor discussion. We're not looking for recommendations at that meeting, but we will be at the new March 4th meeting. We'll be asking you for recommendations on the 5 Tier 2 corridors that have come forward. We are then taking that to the Metro Council on March 17th and asking them to give us recommendation like they just did yesterday on Tier 1. We'll be looking at the Tier 2 recommendations in March, and then back to the task force March 18th, where we hope to bring a conversation about the expenditure plan, the timing of thinking about how we lay projects out over time. Also, importantly, beginning the discussion about oversight mechanisms and accountability mechanisms. Every bond measure that we've worked on at Metro, we want to make sure we build into it a process for folks to hold the Metro Council to account for the promises that are put into a ballot measure. So that's the beginning of that more structural conversation. Absolutely, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. I should do often, but I'm glad for it.
Thank you.
That's what I was doing.
Oh, that's right.
Cool.
That's it.
I gotta go. You know, you would too.
Hold the hour.